Good morning, and you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. I'm joined in studio by Mark O'Donnell, who's the Cree Chief Executive, and also by Rachel Nohaly. You're both very welcome onto the programme today. Mark, I'll start with you first. I know that Cree had your national strategy launched there last week. Talk to us about what you want to see implemented.
And thanks for having us in, John. Yeah, we launched our new manifesto for the future of cardiovascular health in Ireland last Thursday in Dublin. And I suppose initially it might be useful for your listeners to get a sense of the scale of the challenge we're trying to address. So cardiovascular disease accounts for about 9,000 deaths a year in Ireland. So it's an enormous challenge. It is the leading cause of acquired disability and death worldwide. So we also have a huge opportunity in that 80% of cardiovascular disease is preventable. So it's a massive opportunity in that regard.
Okay. And what are the main things you want to see implemented by government?
So there's five key policy asks, John, in the document. The first is we need a national plan for cardiovascular health. We need clear, measurable goals supported by investment. We need ring-fenced budgets. We need clear ownership and accountability, and we need an independent, statutory multi-agency task force to manage the implementation as well.
Okay, I'll get Sean, my colleague, to get you a glass of water there, and we'll move over to your patient advocate, Rachel Nohaly. Rachel, good morning. Talk to us about your journey, because I know the whole heart valve surgery last August. Talk to us about what that's been like and that experience for you.
Good morning, John. Thank you for the opportunity to come and talk. The whole experience was somewhat of a roller coaster of an adventure. I was born with a heart deformity, which was repaired when I was three, and went and lived my life without any problems or issues. And it was only following my husband had an unexpected event where he required open heart surgery in 2021 that I decided to have myself examined. And although I was symptom free, and My doctor said to me, you know, you're asymptomatic, you know, there's not, don't go looking for something if you've no problems. I persisted, and I discovered then that the same heart valve was failing, and I had that replaced last August so successfully. And I was very lucky that I could have a procedure that didn't involve open heart surgery, and my recovery was excellent. The whole experience I found was, from a patient point of view, quite difficult, because you're navigating an area that is so unfamiliar, from the surroundings to the people, and even to the language that's used in healthcare can be very difficult for people to access. And that's why following my recovery, I volunteered with Cree, and to use my patient voice and advocacy through their other group called Heartstroke Voice Ireland, where they want to put the patient front and centre to talk about the experience and to look for what is needed for heart and stroke patients in Ireland.
I know the importance of early testing, it can't be understated.
For sure. And even if you feel healthy, you look healthy, everybody tells you you're healthy, it doesn't mean that you are. And the importance of testing possibly at birth, you can find genetic issues that are there and can be treated. And early testing can prevent a massive episode later on in life, which not alone is traumatic for the patient, but it is very costly for healthcare and for society at large.
Yeah, Mark, back to you. It's great to see that the work yourselves in Cree in helping people recover from this, and Rachel's a good example of that.
Absolutely, John, and sorry, a bit of a catch in my throat earlier on, a glass of water is helping there. So, the recovery piece and support post-event is a huge part of our work in Cree. I suppose we divide our work really into three parts. One is the prevention piece, and that's a huge focus of the policy document we launched last week, is to have that prevention focus, rather than sort of the focus on the acute hospital setting. We'd also focus very much on post-event support, both for the patients themselves and their family members as well, because it's a hugely traumatic traumatic thing for somebody to go through. So we have lots of different programs and initiatives that we'd run on that basis. And I suppose the third pillar of our work is very much about advocacy and patient empowerment as well. And Rachel mentioned that as well with Heart and Stroke Voice Ireland, which is a new initiative we launched last year. So that patient voice is really, really important, because the people who have been through this are the best spokespersons and can speak from that lived experience. And that's hugely valuable. I mentioned just briefly earlier on about the preventability as well. And a lot of the stuff we're talking about here are low-cost interventions. It's things like blood pressure checks, it's things like pulse checks, stethoscope checks, cholesterol tests. They're not, you know, expensive or sort of complicated processes to go through. So we're really kind of pushing for that significant focus on prevention in this new manifesto we've launched last week. Yeah. We also need to have clear ownership on it as well, clear multi-annual budgeting. There's a significant investment required for the long term as well, because this is a problem that's only going to get worse as time goes on.
And it's very important, because cardiovascular disease, it's the biggest annual cause of death and disability globally, with over 9,000 people in Ireland losing their lives as a result each year. But one stat that caught my attention was that the disease is responsible for 40% of all hospital admissions. It's a big burden on the health system as well.
It's enormous, John, yeah. And I suppose that's why we're trying to focus on the prevention element as well, because as great as the problem is now, and it's very significant, I mean, if you look at 9,000 deaths annually, you know, somebody made a comparison recently that that's the equivalent of the population of a medium-sized Irish town that lose their lives every year from cardiovascular disease. So it's an enormous challenge now. But if you look at the demographics, we have an ageing population. People are living kind of an increasingly sedentary lifestyle. So the risk factors are all trending the wrong way. So the problem is big now, but we're facing an enormous challenge down the line unless that preventative aspect is focused on at this point.
Are the government taking this seriously enough? Because I know that the last National Cardiovascular Health Strategy expired in 2019 and there's no evaluation or renewal since.
Yeah, and I think that's extraordinary. I mean, if you look at sort of other areas of focus where, for example, if you look at road safety, which is an enormous issue in itself, but there's a statutory agency for that, there's accountability, there's a clear budget there, there are clear targets and metrics, as there should be. It's an enormous challenge for society. But we don't have anything parallel for cardiovascular health, for heart disease and stroke. So, you know, what we're calling for is a new strategy, but, you know, the last thing we want is a strategy that sits on a shelf and isn't implemented or reviewed or budgeted for. So there's that process. So I think what we're looking for really is the strategy itself to be scoped and prepared in such a way that the implementation planning and the budgeting are factored into that process as well. So, you know, we've looked for a number of other things in the manifesto as well. We've called for a dedicated policy lead in the Department of Health with a direct reporting line to the minister. That's very important. And we've called for a multi-stakeholder task force as well to oversee the implementation of it. So the strategy, I suppose, is one piece of it, but the implementation has to be very, very clear, defined. There needs to be accountability, and people need to own the task as well and be held accountable for delivery of it. And one of the biggest challenges we find is that with the annual budgeting cycle, it's very, very difficult to plan for long-term action if you have a 12-month budget cycle and you're not sure if you're going to have money in year 2, 3, 4, 5 and beyond. So we need to have that sort of longer-term commitment, which would be a change politically as well, to make that sort of long-term financial planning and commitment. But for a challenge of this scale, I think it's absolutely necessary.
It's part of the problem as well, because the Department of Health is such a big department and is badly needing, you need money everywhere. There's a lot of fires to put out there. Is that part of the problem?
It's certainly a challenge, John, but I think, you know, we're taking kind of a broader lens on this. And indeed, in the consultation for the preparation of the manifesto, we consulted very widely across lots of different groups and lots of different organisations and representative bodies that maybe wouldn't normally be in the room for a conversation about health, to get that wide-ranging view. So, you know, when we talk about prevention, early diagnosis is a huge part of that. There's also kind of environmental factors that can be changed. Again, if you look at the smoking ban and the effect that's had since it came in, like that's an environmental change that forces people to change their behaviour. There's similar calls for things like salt and sugar levels in foods. You know, these are kind of big picture items that we can do. So it's not just within the HSE or the Department of Health. It's really kind of a societal challenge that I think needs a whole of government approach.
Okay, and I know you did get that cross-community engagement and support for your manifesto.
We did indeed, John. We've backing from many different organisations from across the community and voluntary sector, civil society organisations, sporting organisations have all endorsed the manifesto. And we think that'll really amplify the message as well, that it's not just Cree, I suppose, that's trying to deliver this message nationally, that if the same message comes from a cross-section of those organisations, we'd be really hopeful on that. And I think one of the things that really came out from that consultation was that from people who maybe don't work in the health space or aren't sort of active in that, that people were just dumbfounded at the scale of the problem. You know, it's the one thing we got back all the time in the feedback is we weren't aware this was such a challenge.
Back to you, Rachel, because we mentioned the early intervention and how important it is. But because of that, you managed to avoid getting open heart surgery, which your husband had to undergo.
Correct, yes. Because Jax was in an emergency situation, he had to have open heart surgery. But because mine was detected at an earlier stage, the surgery could be planned carefully, and we had time. I had maybe 8 or 10 months before I started to have heart failure. So there was no emergency situation, which was a huge advantage for me. And I was lucky that I could avail of new technology that is constantly evolving to make my recovery. And the comparison was like day and night. Jack's recovery took maybe 18 months and I was well recovered in 4 or 5 weeks and back to work in 6 weeks. And that was a big difference in our household as well, because we run our own business and it's important that we're fit and healthy and able to do that. So I could get back to work. It took him a little bit longer. So we've seen the challenges. I've seen it as a carer and as a patient. So I'm speaking really with two hats on. So it is a big challenge. But just to go back to the government point of view, I think the government have a huge social responsibility with regards to this. There is poor national messaging, and it's the job of the government to inform people, to have a proper healthcare information system. And that's a massive, massive gap that people can then take ownership of their own health, advocate for themselves and look after their own heart care and not depend on the doctor to be there to catch you when you fall.
Mark, election season is well and truly underway. Have you been getting many promises yet?
Well, we've just started to roll out the campaign, John, and we'll be engaging very much across the political spectrum over the coming weeks and months. You know, I think this is a key issue that we want to really put front and centre on the political agenda. We had good engagement at the launch event last week in Dublin, but that's really very much the start of a process that we want to undertake. You know, even over the past 6-8 months, we've been engaging at European level on this, so it's kind of a multifaceted approach, and we need the engagement and buy-in from all the political stakeholders.
Finally, Rachel, how are you keeping as of late?
I'm great, very well, thank you.
Brilliant.
Heart is working beautifully. And I expect to get another 25, 35 years out of that valve. So,
brilliant.
Good.
Well, the very best of luck to you. Rachel Nohaly and Mark O'Donnell, the Cree Chief Executive. Thank you both for joining us on Galway Talks. If you want to get a comment into us, do so on our text and WhatsApp number. That's 086-38-3553. You can phone Siobhan on reception on 091-77-0077 and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. We're coming back and we're looking at Organ Donor Awareness Week next.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.
Good morning and welcome to Galway Talks with John Morley. I'm looking at the whole issue of organ donor awareness because it is Organ Donor Awareness Week, and I'm joined in studio now by Lauren Keeney and also by Owen Madden. You're both very welcome into studio today. And Owen, I'll start with you first. Good morning, you're welcome into the programme. And talk to me about your journey. You've had multiple kidney transplants.
That's right. So my name's Owen. I'm chair of the Irish Kidney Association here in Galway. And I'm fortunate to be a transplant recipient myself. When I was a young man, I had various kidney issues, IgA nephropathy it's called. And I ended up on dialysis here in Galway. And I was fortunate the first time round when I was 22, I got a kidney transplant from a deceased donor. That lasted about 8 years. And then I had another kidney transplant from a deceased donor. Again, very lucky. And I wasn't on dialysis long at all that time, just a few months, actually. But then about that kidney kind of quickly started to degrade over time, and 8 years later I was back on dialysis. I was actually on dialysis for 5.5 years the last time, and that was throughout COVID and that, and that was a tough time because we had young children. I was doing the dialysis at home, and I'm a big advocate for home dialysis. I think it's a great option for people if they can do it. Not everybody can.
So just to explain for people, there's hemodialysis and there's peritoneal dialysis. You were doing peritoneal at home.
Correct. You have it all off, John. So there is hemodialysis, and you would have people in Merlin Park doing that three times a week, and some are probably listening to the show right now, hooked up to the machine for 4 hours. Yeah. And then you have hemodialysis also happens in the Wellstone. There's about 180 people receiving dialysis in Galway at the moment, either from County Galway or Roscommon or County Clare. But then the other option is peritoneal dialysis, which you do at home over kind of 8, 9, 10 hours every night, and you do it 7 nights a week, and that's what I was doing.
Yeah, and for people who don't know what that is, it purifies the toxins in the body.
Absolutely. So the hemodialysis, draws blood out of the body over 4 hours and basically clears certain toxins. It can't clear all the toxins, but certain toxins out of the body, and then pumps blood back in. The peritoneal is somewhat similar, but it uses fluid left in your abdomen to kind of pull the toxins out, and your own abdomen acts as a filter pulling those toxins out. And that's a much slower process, so that takes 8 hours, maybe even 10 hours every night. But both have their advantages and their disadvantages. But the basic idea is exactly right. It pulls the toxins out. But neither of these treatments do the same as an actual kidney. Because people who are on dialysis, they can't actually eat a normal diet, because neither of these treatments remove potassium or phosphate from your diet. Mm. And so people on dialysis tend to get very, very itchy, and they tend to have high blood pressure. And this is because they're the increasing levels of phosphate and potassium in their bodies that's not removed by dialysis.
And certainly for hemodialysis anyways, you have a main line that's permanently on you, so that'll inhibit that's you as well.
Oh, it does, yeah, definitely. And you know, having a shower with that line in your chest is nearly impossible. I hate it having showers, but you want to have them at the same time. It was one of the first things after I got a kidney transplant, was like, I can't wait to hit the shower. Have a proper meal, hit the shower and go for a swim. No matter what type of dialysis you're on, you have lines all the time that make it very difficult to go for a swim in a lake, for example, or in the sea, because you'd always be worried about infection. You're always very prone to infections, no matter what type of dialysis you're on.
And since you've got your most recent kidney transplant, what's it been like for you, Owen?
Like I said, the first thing I wanted to do was have a good meal, because you couldn't do that when you're on dialysis. And then one of the second things I wanted to do was go jump in a lake. So I did that, went down to Loughrane and jumped in the lake. It was just so freeing. But I'm like a new man. You know, I've way more energy. I can play with the kids now. It's not a case that I was kind of going to work, doing my work, and then straight into bed. I actually have loads of energy now. I jump out of bed in the morning at 6 a.m. and I'm just full of beans, and it's completely changed my life. And that's down to the organ donors. And as I was saying to Lauren earlier, it's always a privilege for someone like me to meet the family of an organ donor.
There is a trade-off as well, though, because I know when you do get the kidney transplant, you're on immuno tablets for the rest of your life while you have the kidney.
That's true. I'm on immunosuppressants and a small amount of steroids for the rest of my life. But listen, that's a small thing. It's nothing compared to the worry when you're on dialysis of getting an infection, which is actually much more worrisome.
Mm. I'll come to Lauren in studio very shortly, but I want to go to the line and to someone who's actually currently on dialysis and waiting for a kidney transplant. We have Adrian Cummins, who we'll all know as the Chief Executive of the Restaurants Association of Ireland. Adrian, some people might not know that you're currently on dialysis. Talk to us about your journey with kidney failure.
Good morning. My journey started last August when I went into hospital with a viral infection, and my kidney function collapsed within a week, and I was put on dialysis with immediate effect after then. And since September of last year, I have been on dialysis. Listening to your previous speaker, you know, I go 3 days a week to the hospital, get up at half four in the morning. I'm in the hospital at 5:15, hooked up with the machine at 5:30, and I do 3.5 hours, 3 days a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And that's my life at the moment until I get a transplant. And now, while I feel fine at the moment, I've kind of, you know, I'm doing, you get your mind right and you get into the rhythm of your routine and make sure that you mind yourself and eat properly and listen to what the medics say to you, basically, and take their advice and do what they tell you. You should be fine. And it's just a waiting game now in terms of trying to get a donor that get a kidney donation. And I'm being as previous transplantees. Well, no, you have to go through what is called a workup to make sure that you're suitable to get a transplant. And I've done all of that now, thanks be to God, and I came out the other end with a green light.
Mm. How does it affect your day to day? I know you're very busy in the business world as well. Your energy levels after dialysis.
So the first month or so, I was tired, and but now I've got into the rhythm. And while I would, you know, I'd finish in the hospital at just after 9 o'clock, and I would be in my office at maybe 10 o'clock. But you know, I'd get home maybe 6:30 in the evening, but I would be tired that evening. The following day, you'd have lots of energy because the machine will have taken the toxins out of your blood, so you would be, you know, you'd feel an awful lot better. But as you get closer to the next day, day of treatment, you will start to slow down, and the night before you will be tired. So, you know, it fluctuates. You'll have bouts of tiredness and then you'll have bouts of energy. It'll never be constant. And I think, you know, the big thing for me is trying to manage the diet. In my sector is not easy because I represent the restaurant industry in Ireland, and you know, my diet has totally changed because, you know, you have to take out potatoes, avocados, bananas, you know, alcohol is taken out of the diet. A lot of things that would have been absolutely in my diet in the past. I find that a bit hard now, in fairness, but it is what it is, and you just get on with it. It could be an awful lot worse. That's the way my mind is taking this, or the way I'm embracing this at the moment. And in Ireland, the average wait time for a kidney transplant is about 2 years. So might feel like a long time, but it's not a long time. You know, you'll have 6 months a year done in no length if you just put your mind down to it. And, you know, you could get a transplant within less than 6 months as well. You could be lucky. So, you know, it's a waiting game for me. And I have to give a big shout out to the Irish Kidney Association, who have been fantastic in terms of the knowledge that they have, the support that they have. And actually, I'm ringing you from Budapest at the moment. I'm at a conference here. They're able to organise treatment overseas within the European Union for patients that are on dialysis, which I think is fantastic and part of the European Union. But you have to book it maybe 3-4 months in advance. But at least I'm able to travel and for work when I need to. But I resonate with your previous speaker in terms of having a shower, making sure that you don't get the line infected, and you know, all you want to do is have a swim and eat as normal. So they're the things that you miss on a daily basis.
What would it mean to you to get a kidney transplant?
Well, I describe it as being life-changing, and you get a second life in terms of, you know, my kidney disease came about from high blood pressure and the medication associated with that. So by getting a kidney transplant, they say between 15 and 20 years is the duration for it. Hopefully it'll be that longer. So it would change my life. It would allow me to travel beyond the European Union if I wanted to. I'd be able to travel tomorrow morning overseas for more than a week or so without having to plan anything 3 months in advance. It's freedom. You'll have an awful lot more freedom, but also you appreciate your health as well in terms of, you know, you will mind yourself. It's something that you must do. And I think ever since I've been diagnosed with this, I changed my perspective of life as well. You know, you're able to, I feel that I'm in a better mindset in terms of what I'm trying to achieve in both work and my personal life as well. So those things impact you. And I'm grateful for all the support. There is a community out there as well that I've discovered over the last number of months that people will reach out. And there's so much goodwill out there as well from former patients that have gotten a transplant to give advice to families that have their loved ones have gone through the procedures, or those that are actually going through it at the moment. You know, there's like a little club that we're in, and we talk to each other and we try and help each other in whatever way possible. So that's my journey at the moment, and I'm one of 500 people. I think it's 550 people that are on dialysis at the moment in the state, and I could be wrong on that figure, but I think that's it. And it's quite high in terms of our other European countries. But we have a very good medical teams in Ireland. And I think the number one country is Spain. And I think Ireland is ranked out of the 27. I think we're ranked number four in the European Union, which is quite good.
Absolutely. We'll get back to your work there in Budapest. It's the worst place you could do dialysis, Adrian. So thank you for joining us on the line
and taking the call
this morning.
Thank you.
Now, the other side of organ donation is that oftentimes family members lose a loved one in order to give the gift of life to others. We're also joined in studio by Lauren Keeney. Lauren, good morning. Thank you for joining us. Talk to us about your family's journey. I know you lost your brother.
Yeah, so before I get started, I'd just like to give a big shout out to my cousin, Bernard Oak, who is currently in Temple Street, going to be starting dialysis in a few weeks. So we wish him all the best. My brother was out in Australia and with his friends. He had just received his second year visa when he was unfortunately unprovoked attack, punched with a coward's punch in an unprovoked attack, and passed away 10 days later. Thomas would have been such a lovely fella and definitely looked after himself and kept himself well. And my cousin had been born with complications to his kidney. And Thomas had said, you know, should we all be tested? How do we go about giving him a kidney? So when he passed away, we were given the decision, and we decided that was 100% what we would like to have done, and hoping that Bernard Oak would get a kidney, and he did 3 years later.
Wow. Yeah. It's a difficult decision for any family to make at that difficult time for you when you're all grieving, but it was an easy decision for you because you knew your loved one's requests.
Yeah, unfortunately we had been watching baby Bernard Oak go through his complications and everything, but it is not an easy decision in the terms of it, and I do believe people need to talk about it. They need to sign their organ, their card, they need to discuss it, because again, it is not an easy decision, and when you are losing your loved one, you're not necessarily thinking about, you know, how other people might be feeling either in terms of that. And I hope that comes across, you know.
But it was an easy decision for you to make. I know there's a lovely event happening in the Circle of Life Garden in Salt Hill as well. Owen, you want to touch on that?
Yeah, it's the 10-year anniversary of the opening of the Circle of Life Garden. Those of us from the Irish Kidney Association will be there. There'll be a lot of donor families there. I think it's going to be a huge event. We'll be presenting a lovely tree to the garden on behalf of the Irish Kidney Association, and I know a new bench will be revealed on Saturday in memory of volunteers who have worked to promote organ donation over the years, and that's very special to us here in Galway, and everybody in Galway should be proud that there is a national monument to organ donors to people like Lauren's brother.
Beautiful.
And it's here in Galway. That's our national.
Thanks
monument.
To Strange Boats and the work of Martina Goggins and others.
Thanks to Martina Goggins and her husband, yes.
You touched on a point there, Lauren, and your family, you get it because you actually have a family member going through children's dialysis in St. Michael's Seaward in Temple Street Hospital.
Yeah.
And that's a point as well, Owen, that for children, they have to go, no matter where in the country you are, up to Dublin to Temple Street.
Yeah, they do have to go up to Temple Street, you know, and no matter where you are in the country, whether it's Donegal or Galway, and that's a huge burden on those kids and being pulled away from school and a huge burden on their families, you know. Mm.
Could government not invest in dialysis machines for children in Galway and different points across the country to ease that burden?
I think it's more the staff than the machines that you need paediatric nurses and personnel, yeah. But it's a good point, John. You also raised the point that it made it easy for Lauren's family, that they knew Tomás's wishes, and that's a central message of Organ Donor Awareness Week, is please don't leave your loved ones in doubt. If you want to donate your kidneys when you pass away, have that conversation now. Have that conversation today, and don't leave your loved ones in doubt.
I know there's going to be lots of forget-me-not flowers going around today. What's the best way of people saying, I am willing to be an organ donor?
So our volunteers will be out tomorrow, actually, in the Carb Shopping Centre, and we'll be giving out organ donor cards, and you can get one in any pharmacy. You can pick them up in loads of shops and various places around town. You can also go on the website, ika.ie, and you can download for your phone an organ donor app. But there's what I'm saying is there's various ways of getting that free organ donor card. You can also tick the box when you get a new driving license. But the most important thing is to actually have that conversation. So the card there, that's just an indicator, and it's really just a tool to stimulate that conversation between you and your loved ones. It's not a legally binding document. Mm. It's just a way to have that conversation or to start that conversation with your family. But you don't need the card. You just need to have that conversation and don't leave your loved ones in doubt.
I know government is moving in the direction of prioritising this more as well, because I know the opt-out clause has been moving along.
Yeah, so that legislation has passed. It has been signed into law just a few weeks ago. Mm. That's the Human Tissue Bill. And listen, we have been talking about that for 20 years, so it's fantastic to see that is done now and it is in place. And that changes a few small things, like altruistic donation is now legal in Ireland. But ultimately, it doesn't change the fact that if you are happy to have your organs donated after you pass away, now is the time to talk to your loved ones. It doesn't change that. And it doesn't change the fact that if you pass away, it will be your family who make that final decision, you know?
Yeah.
Their assent is required.
Definitely. Lauren, finally to you, how is your cousin, I believe you said, in Temple Street with the dialysis?
Yeah, he's doing better, and hopefully we'll have good news soon, and hopefully the home dialysis will work and he'll slowly get back to his life, yeah.
Brilliant. Lauren Keeney and Owen Madden, the Galway Chair of the IKA, and also Adrian Cummins, who joined us on the line. Thank you all for joining us for the very important subject of organ donor awareness. If you want to get an organ donor card, do so tomorrow at various points across the city. And also, you can just sign your licence as well, Owen, I believe. Is that a way of doing it?
That's true. When you get a new driving licence, there's a code 112. So it's just a tick box on the form when you apply for a new driving licence. Mm.
Definitely have that conversation, because it is very important. It touches a lot of lives as well. And if you're looking at the Late Late Show tonight, I know a little girl who will be raising the issue of organ donor awareness with Brian O'Driscoll. And I'll say no more on that now. But still to come on the programme today, we're looking at Electric Picnic with a few messers in studio next. That's all to come on Galway Talks.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway and get free 3-year warranty on hundreds of used cars.
Good morning, you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. A reminder, we're giving you a pair of tickets to win for different events at the Cork International Festival this week. If you want to be in a chance of winning the Cork Storyteller event in the Tyvek on Sunday at 11:30, text in story now to 086-3833-553. That's story, your name and location, to 086-3833-553, and do so straight away. I also want to read out that it's the last chance to enter the Galway Hospice Car Raffle. The first prize is a 2024 Kia. Second prize is a holiday to France with Keller Travel. Third prize is €500 cash. Tickets are €10, 3 for 20 or 15 for 100. Tickets are available from raffle.galwayhospice.ie. from Galway Hospice Renmore or on 091-770-868. The closing date is this Sunday, the 28th of April, so get involved in that straight away. I'm joined in studio by Kate O'Malley from On The Move. Kate, good morning.
Morning, John. How are you?
It's good to have you with us. And I know you like going to Electric Picnic, so I'll let you have your junket now. What's this all about?
Yes, big fans of Electric Picnic. We are still sweating on the lineup. It's to be released at some point today. We were kind of hoping it would be 9 a.m. I heard a whisper that it might be 1, heard another whisper it might be 11. So look, we wait and hope.
The big question, are the Coronas going to be at it, headlining?
Well, listen, if you've any input into the lineup, they will be on playing multiple stages, multiple days. It'll be Corona Fest. No, I'm joking. I hope they will be. And in fairness, Electric Picnic are usually good to have quite a strong Irish lineup. So yeah. I'd expect to see the Coronas there at some point. If they're not on stage, they'll be punters.
But it's become more diverse, the festival. The likes of the Wolf Tones playing it. And it's, they're hitting different genres now.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think the Wolf Tones really were the surprise package of last year because, like, you'll have seen the viral videos afterwards. It was 20 deep outside the tent. Like, the tent was absolutely swinging. It was 20 deep outside the tent. And would you believe I picked that minute to go off to the loo from the Wolf Tones? And when I say I'm 5'2", I was trying to find my friends. Now, thankfully, one of the lads is about your height, 6'11". Okay. So... He was the flagpole.
Put a shiny hat on him.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. We're going to get him an umbrella hat for next year. But no, the Wolf Tones were a huge success. I personally would have a punt on them featuring this year, but maybe on the main stage because Electric Picnic is celebrating its 20th anniversary. Mm. It's the Wolf Tones' last year of touring. So I feel like there's a lot going on there that it's meant to be. Yeah, it's kind of fated a little bit. In saying that, I did a bit in the show yesterday about I had a couple of weeks ago done like a list of predictions. So whenever the lineup comes out, I'll be put to the sword to see how far off the mark I was. But I think, you know, there's a lot of interest in the festival. Obviously, it's 2 weeks earlier this year. And the reasoning behind that was that they were trying to secure a big touring band. So I think there's a lot of excitement to see who is it going to be. There's plenty of speculation on Twitter and in Facebook pages and all that kind of stuff. We won't go into it now, but yeah, it's exciting. But anyway, listen, I'm here to tell you about the trailer park, which is something I'm super passionate about because we did it a couple of years back. And even though the weather was as bad as I've ever had at a festival, like, I can't even convey the level of rain.
I was there that year as well. I think I had trench foot at the end of it.
Oh, but you know what? Trench foot was the least of your worries because, like, I remember at one stage we had a gazebo, right? We had a tent under the gazebo and it was still raining in the tent. Like, it was just biblical.
Collecting water.
Yeah, it was just a horrible, horrible, horrible weekend. But in saying that, we did the trailer park that year, so... It was also raining in the caravan. But basically, for people who've never been to Electric Picnic, Trailer Park is part of the festival. It's an area inside where the stages are and it's super interactive. So they kind of create almost like a corral, put a load of caravans in there and each of the caravans has a different theme. Now, they're kind of upcycled caravans or horse boxes or cattle boxes, that kind of effort. And each different one has a different theme and it's completely up to whoever is designing it what the theme is. And like there's absolutely no constraints. There's no limits. As mad as you can make it is how mad you make it. Do you know what I mean? I think some of my favourite ones over the years have been, there was the Daniel O'Donnell experience, which was like going into Daniel O'Donnell's house, like a little shrine to Daniel O'Donnell. There was another one then that was like the Cayley kitchen. So you went through and the caravan was set up like a kitchen and then there was trad out the back in kind of a marquee job. I'm looking at my list here as well. Yeah, there's Caravanioki. So obviously there's karaoke going on there. The Quizzy Van, there's like interactive quizzes. Caravan Mambo as well. They set it up like an Ibiza nightclub. So they had it all corralled off and they were playing tunes for the weekend and it was absolutely hopping. And that's kind of the crack of it. So they're open for applications at the moment. Basically, if you have an idea, I would encourage you to go and pitch it because they're very much open to the madder, the wackier, the more nonsense, the better. And yeah, that's the trailer park.
So you could possibly pick out a theme like a Corona song, like Get Loose. Get Loose could be your caravan theme. I don't know what you do in that van, but
I wouldn't like to speculate on Breakfast Radio. I mean, the time that we did it, so we did a census caravan, so it was Come to Your Census, the central SESH office, and we painted the outside of the van so that it looked like a census form. The other way, it's that really distinctive, like two-tone green, and we had loads of questions, but it was like, it wasn't a serious census, obviously. It was like name, campsite, what's your top tip for surviving electric picnic, what's your electric picnic horror story, and all this kind of thing. But I think people were so lamped pottering around that and we had kind of high-vis jackets on us, and we went around and we were like, have you done the census yet? And we were handing out the forms, and I think people were just in an altered state of mind, and they were like, Jesus, the census, they're just like, this is really serious. So people were coming over and they were, you know, filling out, they were so earnest filling out forms, and then they get to the kind of jokey questions, they'd be like, is this thing real? And we'd be like, yeah. Obviously not, like, but we had such outrageous crack, the whole crew of us, even though it was rainy, even though it was Miz, we just had such a laugh. And then there was another Galway caravan as well last year that Niall was going to come in and join us but got held up, unfortunately. So I said I'd give them a shout out. It was the TG caravan, and basically their caravan was like an homage to like classic TV moments. So they had like a Marty Whelan shrine. They had, you know, the photo of the guy that went viral on RT News that slipped in the ice. And there was like Zig and Zag and Dustin and, you know, this kind of thing. And
Kevin from Galway.
Where's the chains? All that kind of jazz. And like, that's kind of the beauty of it, is that they are pure nonsense. And when you hop into Trailer Park, you don't know what you're going to get. But people have put such imagination, creativity into it, that it's actually one of my favourite spots in Electric Picnic to go and hang out, because you don't know, like, you could get anything walking in there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think last year as well, there's a Santa's Grotto.
Okay.
And they had like an ice bar kind of thing. So it's horrendous crack. And if people do have ideas, definitely check it out. You can find all the information on Electric Picnic's socials. And you just kind of put together a pitch, like a couple of drawings, a budget for what you think you'll need. I would say the hardest part we found about doing it, having never, like, I follow so many Instagram accounts that are converting, I don't know, cow trailers and horse boxes and all this into tiny homes. I had never attempted anything like it. So we were very much painting the outside of the caravan with like paints you'd use in primary school.
The roof would be the most important part. Is there any criteria in terms of applying for it?
No, not that I'm aware of. It has to be an original idea, and there's just some different bits. If you do get, if your pitch is successful, you do have to have the caravan on site by a certain date. So there's kind of, it's not necessarily criteria, but it's just dates that you need to be aware of. But I would say,
how about picnic talks?
Picnic talks.
Yeah, Galway talks, picnic talks. No. That work? I just want to go to the Electric Picnic.
I know, pitch a job. We'll workshop it off air. I think this is maybe an internal conversation that we need to have. But no, there's every kind of a thing down there. Yeah. So the main part is, though, that we did finding a caravan a little bit tricky. So you'd want to have your research done when you're putting together your budget of how much you think you're going to spend on finding a caravan or a horse box or whatever. That's the only kind of thing.
Brilliant. Kate O'Malley from On The Move. They'll chat you three. Thanks for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thank you.
Still to come on the programme today, we have Galway Thoughts, our panel discussion. And on the panel today, we have a number of MEP candidates, including Senator Niall Blaney. We have Fergal Landy and also Michelle Smith. Fergal is a Labour candidate and Michelle is independent. So all that plus lots more coming up on Galway Talks. We also have our sports preview. It is approaching 11 o'clock. A very good morning to you.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Find hundreds of used cars to suit your budget in Windsor Motor Mall Galway, located on the Monavay Road.